this magic moment. So different and so new, was like any other, until I met you. And then it
welcome to another episode of This Magic Moment. I'm John Forward, and today I watched Harry Potter and the Order of Phoenix. This is the fifth movie in the series, so if you want to hear the other episodes, you can go to johnforward.podbean.com and listen to me. I'm going through these movies for the first time, decades after they came out, or well, almost. The first one, I think, was 2001. This is 2020 now for all of those people in the future, multiple generations of Harry Potter fans. If you're enjoying this, you should probably share it with your children and your children's children and your children's children's children. It should really become a family tradition to go through these movies and listen to the John Forward commentary on each of them. I think this one is my favorite so far. Parts of it almost seem like it was made for me. It amped up the horror elements a bit in this one. It's a little scarier at some point, and it's also got a pretty strong anti-authoritarian message. It's almost there's like a secret group of anarchists trying to take down the magical government from within the Harry Potter universe. So this is firing on all cylinders for me. We did get back after a bit of an absence in part four. They didn't show Harry's aunt and uncle and cousin who hate his guts, but he still has to live with them for some reason. They weren't in the last movie, but we get abusive home life back here again. Harry's cousin, I forget what his name is, something that starts with a D, because he's called Big D, I think, in this movie. I don't think it means big dick. That's inappropriate for a children's movie. But he's become a burly teen, as some might say. He's wearing the like a jersey with a thick silver chain, and he's a bully, and he's making fun of Harry for having a dead mom. Harry Potter really had my sympathy in that scene. And then we go home, and his family still hates him. There's a bit of an altercation that I'll talk about that happens with Harry and the cousin, and the cousin Big D gets all messed up, and the big fat uncle says, "Our boy has gone yumpy." And it's Harry's fault, and they're very mad. Well, they think it's Harry's fault, and they're very mad at him. He gets a letter saying that he's expelled from Hogwarts. And again, I don't understand why, but the uncle seems to be happy. But I would just assume that means that Harry Potter is going to be home all year and causing him grief. So I'm not sure why he's always trying to pull Harry out of Hogwarts and excited when he gets kicked out. What kicks off the movie with when Harry is with his cousin is there's a Dementor attack. These are the I called them ring wraiths because they're very similar. When they're in the last movie, they've been redesigned a little bit. They look more like mummy ghosts. I think the design of them is seemed better. I didn't do like a side-by-side comparison, but I'm happy with the results. So a couple of the Dementors, these evil things that are supposed to be only used for guarding Azkaban prison, or they sent them out in the last movie to guard Hogwarts because they thought Sirius Black was coming to kill Harry Potter. So they attack Harry Potter and Big D, and Harry does a magic spell to shoot them away, and he gets in trouble. He gets expelled from Hogwarts because it's against the rules to use magic in front of Muggles. And getting expelled from magic school doesn't seem like that would be a good punishment for that, because then, like, if you've got a teenage wizard who's using magic too much, to kick him out of school, he's just gonna go rogue. If he's not allowed to do magic, he's just gonna end up doing more. But anyway, this is the rules of the Ministry of Magic, who's the evil government of this movie. And luckily, we've got the titular Order of Phoenix working in the shadows against the Ministry of Magic. Sirius Black is in there, Professor Moody from the last movie, and some other people are part of the Order of Phoenix. And I enjoyed the reveal. They went to like an apartment building, and Professor Moody does a spell, and kind of, it's hard to describe, but they make the building expand so that it's got like another row of apartments. That's where they hang out, the Order of Phoenix. So anyway, Harry Potter is whisked away to the Order of Phoenix because they're very set on making sure that Harry Potter doesn't get expelled from Hogwarts for some reason. Anyway, so they give him a heads up that they're still going to, they haven't officially expelled him yet, despite what the letter said. They were going to be having a hearing to present evidence and all that stuff. Also going on at the same time, everybody is the powers that be are painting Harry Potter and Dumbledore as dangerous Alex Jones style conspiracy theorists who are lying about Voldemort's return that happened at the end of the last movie. I'm not really sure why everybody's got such a boner for insisting that that Voldemort has not returned yet. They should probably be more worried about it. But anyway, I think the minister of the Ministry of Magic, he thinks that Dumbledore's out to get his job and that he's forming an army to seize power. And the ministry owns the corporate media and is using that to slander them. One of the headlines I enjoyed was, "Dumbledore, daft or dangerous? You be the judge." You know, up until this point, I've made my thoughts known on Dumbledore. So far, he's not been a very impressive man, so I was leaning towards daft. He does, in the end, earn some of his reputation. So they have a hearing, and this is like a big court, like Supreme Court type deal to figure out if Harry Potter's going to get suspended. And they don't end up, the charges don't stick because some lady also saw the Dementors and confirmed Harry Potter's story. And Dumbledore, there's like a full-on like courtroom scene, and Dumbledore is like the charismatic defense lawyer who you know, sets things in motion that hey, if the Dementors attacked Harry Potter, why is that? And implying that, you know, the Ministry of Magic put a hit out on Harry Potter and demands a full study and look into the whole thing. And so anyway, that's what gets everything going. Unfortunately, even though the Ministry of Magic could not convict Harry Potter, they decide to send in like their head lady, what was her name, Dolores Umbridge. She's one of the she's kind of the Nancy Reagan, I don't know if that works as a reference, but that's what I'm gonna go with. She's wearing like she's not a Jackie O character, but she's wearing like a Jackie O like pink lady power suit type thing with a hat. She's like the conservative scolding lady, and they end up inserting her into Hogwarts as the new teacher for the Defense Against the Dark Arts, which this is five movies in a row where they've hired the wrong person for this teaching position. This leads to a big crackdown on Hogwarts. This lady is screaming for education reform, and she wants them to all study hard for the OWL exam, which, like a standardized test. And there's a Ministry of Magic approved curriculum, and it's all useless theoretical stuff that doesn't apply to the real world. Like, this is what happens when the government gets so into regulating the education of our children, everybody. This is a very powerful message in the movie. But it has the unintended consequence, which I think is apt, that, you know, the more that they try to crack down on unregulated kid magic, the more unregulated kid magic happens. And, they end up, the kids all get together and actually form the Dumbledore army that these social architects slash fascists actually, they created the very thing that they're saying that they're trying to stop. And you know, when the kids end up, forming their little army, I'll get into that when we get to the Harry Potter section. But anyway, they catch on to them, and they're calling themselves Dumbledore's Army without ever checking with Dumbledore about this. And so, anyway, Dumbledore, they try to arrest him, but then he's just like, see ya, and poof, and he just disappears until mostly the end of the movie. There's some fun stuff in this movie. Like I said, the magic apartment. That scene, I'm not describing it very well, but I thought it was cool. I liked the antics of the older Weasley twins. There's a scene where they're standing at the top of the staircase in the Order of Phoenix, and they do a spell or something and like lower one of their ears down like several floors on a piece of string so that they could eavesdrop on the grown-ups. And then a cat comes and he eats the ear. It's never really explained how he gets his ear back. I thought it would have been funny for the Weasley brother to just have an ear missing for the rest of the movies, but that requires some extra CGI. They also they feed the caretaker some puking pustules, which make him have like gross open sores on his face. They also bust in during the big owl exam and fly around and do some fireworks and raise anarchy. I like a lot of the Voldemort stuff in this movie. I especially like the scene early on where Harry Potter's kind of seeing visions. They're at the train station and Voldemort just kind of appears to him and like cocks his head kind of funny to the side. They kind of make Voldemort be kind of like a Freddy Krueger type thing. Like early on, I'm picturing like in the first Nightmare on Elm Street movie and a lot of the ones that followed, kind of the early scenes before Freddy starts killing people, but just keeps, you know, planting himself in their dreams and their thoughts just as a vaguely menacing figure that's not really explained. Not a lot of great comedy in this movie. There was a couple of good things in the last one, particularly Harry Potter spitting out his juice in the last one, and there was a thing with the reporter. Yeah, these movies are very against mainstream media. I'm just realizing that's been a theme for the last two movies. There is one, I think this must have been an on-purpose joke, but like during Dolores Umbridge's crackdown on Hogwarts, and she's going around and she measures Warwick Davis's character, who's still inexplicably younger in this movie. I don't think they're ever going to explain it. Measuring him, he's a little person, just to see if that, and then as they're measuring his height, they cut to like another scene of her demanding that somebody give just a teensy tiny prophecy. Hilarious stuff. We've got some new characters. Mostly the only new character is Dolores Umbridge, which I looked up what... I have an idea of what the word umbridge means, but I wasn't sure, so I looked it up, and it means an offense or an annoyance. Which, yeah, this character is offended and annoyed, so that works. She was on the... I don't know if you call it a jury, but she was on the people that raised their hand to convict Harry Potter after the hearing. She's very big on blind loyalty to the Ministry of Magic. She's got animated cat plates hanging on the wall in her office. She's always scolding everybody about having different ideas, and she doesn't want anybody using magic, even though they're all magic people. She brings in the standardized exams, and she wants to crack down on Hogwarts. She's got a more authoritarian discipline. She's making a Harry Potter write lines, which I kind of forgot was a thing. I don't know if they do that anymore. I know when I was a kid, like, aside from, like, the Bart Simpson on the chalkboard, that's still there. But I remember having to write lines when I was a kid, and they would just tell you a sentence like, "I won't be a bad boy," and you have to write it down 100 times, which was always a stupid punishment. It never really bothered me. But anyway, so they're making Harry Potter write, his line is, "I shall not tell lies," which, you know, cause they're saying that he's lying about Voldemort coming back for some reason. But when he writes a line, she gives him like a magic, quill to write it with. And it ends up like carving, "I will not tell lie" in his hands. So like physically abusing these children. She threatens to use some kind of illegal torture curse technique later on to get some answers out of somebody. She goes full Jack Bauer on these people. She does get her comeuppance later. She gets grabbed by a bunch of centaurs in the woods who are mad because the ministry is regulating their actions and territory, and they don't like it. She gets taken away by them, and as she's being pulled off into the woods to have ungodly things done to her, she pleads with Harry Potter, "Please tell them I mean no harm." And Harry Potter, just cold as a motherfucker, says, "I must tell no lies," and just lets her get dragged away. So that was a pretty good callback. We've got another dumb flying scene, which I've discussed. I think these are mandatory in the movies. They hop on some dragon things to fly to London, and there's an extended scene with, you know, with the sweeping orchestral music and everybody flying around and, and like looking at each other and smiling like, "This is so fun, isn't it?" And I'm against flying for the sake of flying scenes in these movies. I'm standing strong. I feel like there was another one, but I don't remember what it was. No Quidditch game in this one, which I'm happy for. I don't know if Quidditch continues in the book. It doesn't really make any sense in the context of this, although you would think, you know, with the education reform and crackdown, that they would want to try to funnel people into sports as kind of an outlet for you know, for their rebellions, I guess. But no Quidditch game. We get some of our previous characters coming back. Professor Moody, who I liked in the last one, although he was an imposter the whole time and was actually David Tennant, the bad guy. So I wasn't really sure what his personality was going to be. He's in this, and I still like his googly eye, but he didn't really have a whole lot to do other than whisk Harry away to the Order of Phoenix, and he shows up again towards the end for the fight, but he doesn't really have a lot of scenes or lines. No David Tennant, who I really enjoyed as one of the villains in the last movie. He must still be sitting in Azkaban. Don't know if he's going to come back in the other movies. Side character Seamus, just one of the other sort of people that are in Gryffindor at Hogwarts. He's just kind of the ugly one. Or, well, he's not as ugly as Neville, but he's got kind of a rat face. He sticks around to, he's mad at Harry because he's been manipulated by the mainstream media that's tarnishing the good name of Harry Potter. And he's like, "My mom read in the paper that you're bad, so I think you're bad." But anyway, he's just like, "Sorry, dude," a little while later. Doesn't really have any stakes. We get Sirius Black, who was the fake villain from the last movie. He's winking at Harry very creepily throughout this movie. That was weird. Also kind of pulls him aside, like, oh, I couldn't not see you off when he when he's going back to school or something. It's very creepy. He does make another appearance talking in the Gryffindor fireplace. It's a different effect. Last time they CGI'd the actual coals to be talking and sort of in the shape of Sirius Black's face. They just kind of do like a weird hologram above the fire in this one. Neither effect is good. I think they just changed it this time because they had Gary Oldman's actual face that they could use because he's in the movie. Anyway, Sirius Black also being tarnished on the radio and being blamed for all the bad things because he's still technically a fugitive. It's not well known that he's a good guy. We get a new student who I don't know if she was always there and they just decided to start talking to her, or she arrived at Hogwarts for some reason. Her name's Luna. She's kind of a weird, awkward girl to apply to the weird, awkward girl fan base, I'm sure. Another attempt at a joke when we first meet her. She's all kooky and weird, and she tells Harry that, you're not any crazier than me, and then it pans down, and she's reading her book upside down. There's a little bit of chemistry between Luna and Harry Potter. I thought maybe they were setting them up to be a love interest, but it didn't really go anywhere. Snape is back, our favorite cranky man. Alan Rickman, he gets knocked down a few pegs in this movie a little bit. Last one I thought maybe they were playing him up for a double twist that he was a bad guy. This one he was kind of made more sympathetic still further. Umbridge is interrogating all the teachers in front of a classroom full of students to add more shame to it, and she makes him admit that he applied to be the Defense of the Dark Arts teacher, but they didn't give him the job, so he's stuck teaching potions. He also has a thing where he's training Harry Potter to like read minds and to protect his mind, and Harry ends up reading Snape's mind, and we see a flashback of young goth Snape being bullied by Harry Potter's dad. So that's an interesting wrinkle to add to this whole thing. We've got young Malfoy. He's in a couple of scenes. He's just kind of just being an asshole in this movie. I think they abandoned setting him up completely to be some sort of a rival to Harry Potter. He's really been pushed off to the side. He's just the generic asshole bully character that needs to be in any kind of a school thing. And of course, it does make sense that that him and his douchey friends be like the bullies all become like the ministry goons to go out and like tattle on our heroes for doing the right thing. Malfoy Senior again continues to be well known as a bad guy and on Team Voldemort, but you know, Malfoy Jr. still in school. Nobody seems to make much of a big deal that Malfoy Sr. is a major bad guy. But anyway, Voldemort is back being Freddy Krueger a little bit. His main plan in this movie is to gaslight Harry and to question his sanity, and I don't know. He's apparently looking for something that he never had last time when he made his big... I don't really know what happened. I think they've explained it a little bit, but I'm not really sure what Voldemort's big plan was that happened all those years ago when he tried to kill baby Harry Potter but failed. I don't think they explained that really. But anyway, he's trying to do the same thing again, whatever that is, and he needs some prophecy to help him somehow. It's not well explained. Hermione is back. She used to be kind of the goody two-shoes, following the rules, but you know, she's becoming an angsty teen herself in this one, and she's all about breaking the rules. She mouths back to Umbridge when they're in class one day, where Umbridge says that there's no need to talk, and Hermione snaps back with no need to think from the sounds of it. So that was pretty spicy. But she doesn't really have a whole lot else to do in this movie other than to convince Harry Potter to become their teacher, which I'll get to. Ron Weasley's kind of on the sidelines too. I don't really remember anything that he did of note in this movie. His older brothers had a few hijinks that I talked about before, but little Ron, nothing much. Harry is getting ghosted a lot in this movie. He sees Sirius when he first goes to the Order of Phoenix and has a look on his face like, oh, it's my long-lost lover, Sirius Black. But then they do the thing where like somebody stands in front of Harry and starts talking to him and closes the door, and they kind of whisk him away, which doesn't make any sense. And Sirius, you would think that he would be like, hey, Harry, what's up? After not seeing him for so long, and they've been pen pals, talking in fireplaces and such. Dumbledore ghosts him at the beginning of the movie. Harry's like, hey, Dumbledore, Dumbledore, and he's just kind of puts his hand up on the side of his head and takes off. That's explained later that Dumbledore was doing that. He thought for Harry's good, because he understood that Harry and Voldemort have this psychic connection, and he thought that if he was a jerk to Harry, then Voldemort would be less inclined to use their relationship to his advantage or something. So anyway, and Hagrid, his other best man friend at the school, he's just been away, unexplained. We find out what he was doing later, but anyway. Everybody coming, not everybody, I guess, the ministry people and all of the bootlickers are against Harry Potter in the first of this, but it's the usual. Harry Potter gets accused of something and everybody's like, no, he didn't. And they say, Harry, you've done nothing wrong. And I was thinking at the time, well, he kind of did. If there's a rule against using magic in front of muggles, he definitively did it. He had a good reason, of course. But anyway, we find out in the court that it would have been okay if it's a life or death situation, which it was, but nobody believes that the Dementors were there because nobody saw them, but then the lady did see them, so we got off, but I think everybody just thought that Harry was just showing off and was like, hey, cousin, check out this spell I can do. And if that's the case, I don't know why everybody would be so mad at him, even if he was guilty, but anyway. Yeah, I don't know. They're all manipulated by the mainstream media, I think. Harry comes probably the closest he'll ever come in this whole series to calling somebody a C-word. You can see the rage boiling in his face in one of these scenes when he's talking to Umbridge. Yeah, he has the sweet I will not tell lies comeback when he finally sticks it to that lady. Up until a certain point, I haven't been terribly impressed with the arc of Harry Potter, the character, but, we make some progress in this movie. He had a good moment of growth when Hermione, first brings up the idea that, you know, Harry Potter, you've been fighting bad guys with magic this whole time. Maybe you should be our teacher to defend against the dark arts, which makes sense. He has been defending himself against the dark arts, and she makes a big thing like, Harry Potter, you're a hero and you've done all this stuff. And Harry has a good moment of humility where he admits that he never really knew what he was doing and that he was mostly just succeeding with a lot of help and usually with the help of other people, which is very true. So I was impressed that Harry could admit that to himself and to everybody else, and I think that really won me over. That humility, I think, made him a great teacher, I think. We've talked about the teaching methods used throughout these various movies, and there's a lot of kind of textbook, hey, what's the definition of this? And Hermione raises her hand and rattles off the textbook definition. Harry's more hands-on, and he's helping, and he's letting the students work at their own pace, and he's there as a facilitator instead of, like, the person in front of the room, which I think is more pedagogically sound. And that's a good balance to, like, the evil Umbridge lady who's bringing in her, you know, her standardized tests and all theoretical stuff and nothing useful in the real world. So that's good. And he has kind of the, you know, he's, as his connection to Voldemort getting stronger, he doesn't really do the thing where his scar hurts in this movie for some reason. He is kind of seeing things through Voldemort's eyes. Like, he sees Voldemort in snake form have a pretty gruesome snake bite attack against Ron Weasley's dad. That would be a pretty scary scene for a kid, I think. So Harry has the kind of, well, what if I'm just as bad as Voldemort? What if I'm going to turn into a bad guy? Oh my God. And everybody's like, everybody's a little bit good and a little bit bad, Harry Potter. It's which impulses you act on, which I think is a good message. Daniel Radcliffe, I've got no complaints about his acting in this movie. All of the previous movies have had several scenes that made me roll my eyes, but, I don't know. They must have just decided that he's really bad at play acting, that his scar hurts. Maybe that's why they stopped doing it in this movie, but no complaints, young feller. He's, really stepping up, stepping into the role. The last movie, as I mentioned, had a very long teen romance section, which I did not appreciate. There's a little bit in this movie, but not nearly as much. Harry Potter's crush from the last movie is there, and like he runs into her when he first gets to Hogwarts, and then she immediately rides off in a carriage, ghosting him again, like all the men in his life. Later on, him and his girlfriend crush kind of have like a gross, sloppy teen kissing session, which is, it made me uncomfortable. Also, they're making out right in front of dead Robert Pattinson's picture that's hanging on a mirror, and she was like his date for the big dance in the last movie, so that she's making out with Harry Potter in front of his animated picture of a dead guy is a little weird. But yeah, Harry does, aside from making out with this chick and being a little bit awkward at the beginning, he doesn't seem terribly into this girl. You know, after they've shared their first kiss, like the next scene, he takes off immediately and like runs full speed towards Hagrid when they find out that he's back. I mean, teenage boy just had his first kiss. Like, oh, my big burly hairy man friend is back. Never mind you, person that lets me kiss you. Like, that's not how a teenage boy works. I also, in the scene where Snape and Harry are doing their mind meld thing, Snape can see Harry's thoughts and memories, and again, for a teenage boy who just had his first kiss, Snape didn't really see any of the salacious filth that probably would be in a real life Harry Potter's mind at that point in his life. But yeah, that would have changed the rating of the movie significantly. But yeah, anyway, at one point when they're having their secret Harry Potter led magic classes, the girlfriend ends up selling them out and tattling and telling the Slytherin goons where they're at, and they tell Umbridge, who blows a hole in the wall and gets everybody in trouble. This is where Dumbledore gets arrested. We find out later that they made her drink a truth serum, so it wasn't her fault that she told on him. So they kind of set up like, oh, she betrayed us, and then, oh, wait, no, she didn't. But then they never have that scene where they make up. Like, not even at the end of the movie, Harry Potter is not even like, well, see you in the fall when they go home. A little bit of a love connection between Hagrid's giant brother Grobby. He like, I think he has a thing for Hermione. He picks her up like King Kong, and Hermione and has a really good strong scene where she stands up for herself in her own body autonomy and looks him in the eyes and says, put me down right now. And that was a good, and she got put down. every movie, I think, so far hints at some sort of future romance between Hermione and Ron, and that never happened in this movie, so I don't know if they've abandoned it, but anyway, I don't think they're a good couple, so I hope it's been abandoned, but that's just weird that they've been setting it up for a few movies now. So we come to the ending, and it's got kind of the lazy trope that's in movies where the hero finds out that the bad guy needs a particular thing to complete their evil plan. So the heroes run as fast as they can to the evil thing, which ends up just leading the bad guys to it. So yeah, they go and they're looking for some prophecy that's in a smoky crystal ball. I'm not really sure what it has to do with Voldemort's plan. The evil bad guys who are Voldemort's kind of team, who looked like kind of zombie clan members in the last movie. Their hats aren't as pointy in this one, and their masks are different. But they show up to have a little bit of a fight with the kids to try to take the magic prophecy crystal ball back. They capture all the other kids, and they force Harry Potter to hand over the thing, but then the Order of Phoenix shows up and they have a big magic fight with the bad guys. That's pretty good, action-packed, and Helena Bonham Carter is one of the new bad guys, who we learn she's the one that killed Neville's parents. And she ends up killing Sirius Black in the battle in this one. And Harry, again, very close to calling somebody a C-word. He almost kills Helena Bonham Carter. And Voldemort's like, yes, yes, feel the pain and the hate course through your veins. He's trying to turn him to the dark side. But Harry Potter resists, and she gets away. Voldemort shows up. He doesn't really fight with Harry. He tries to take over his mind and turn him to evil, but Harry Potter just says that I feel sorry for you, Voldemort. I'm not going to be your best friend. And Dumbledore shows up, and he has a pretty good Liam Neeson's character in Star Wars Episode 1 against the Sith guy, or what's his name, Darth Maul, and Obi-Wan Kenobi versus Darth Vader. They have kind of their big fight, and Dumbledore earns a bit of his keep. He's a pretty good magic man. But I was going to say, when they had their courtroom scene where they were trying to prove whether or not Harry was innocent or not, why didn't Dumbledore use his magic thing where he could just pull the memory out of Harry Potter's ear and be like, look, he saw the scary mummy zombies. What, I forget what they're called. I wrote it down. So anyway, they have a fight and he kind of wins. Yeah, he's still not dead. I thought this was where he was going to die. I guess I thought that the Dumbledore death was going to happen earlier in the series, but we've got three more movies and it hasn't happened yet. This would have been a good time for it. We already killed Sirius Black earlier, though. You can't kill more than one big character in part 5 of 8. But Dumbledore beats him up. Harry Potter doesn't get taken over. We find out that only one of Harry Potter and Voldemort can live while the other one does. So they've been set up that one of the two is going to die at some point. We can guess which one. And then at the end of the movie, the ministry minister of magic, he shows up, and just as Voldemort is leaving, and he's like, oh my god, it really is Voldemort. I thought that the ministry was in on this whole conspiracy, and that they were just slandering Dumbledore to kind of help Voldemort somehow, but it turns out that they're just wildly incompetent. He shows up, and he's like, oh, you were right, and they just reverse all of their rule changes. They throw that Umbridge lady right under the bus, and they just take back all of their bad ideas, which is not really something that happens when a government finds out that it was wrong about something. It's not really that big of a turnaround, that quick of a turnaround. It's not really how it works. So, but anyway, I don't know where it goes from here. Voldemort's still clearly in play. Hagrid went off to visit the giants to try to get them on the side of fighting against Voldemort, which I'm not sure if his brother Grobby that we met was also a giant, or if he met giants and Grobby is just a big guy that is separate from the giants, but I assume the giants are going to come into this at some point. Now everybody knows that that Voldemort is back. So the good guys are going to be able to double their efforts, but now Voldemort doesn't need to keep things on the down low anymore, so he's going to be out in the forefront in the next movie. I'm hoping he breaks David Tennant out of prison. That'll be good. But yeah, this is the best one yet. It's got some mild teen romance, but it was minimal, and the story's shaping up. The CGI is getting much better, and I'm looking forward to see what happens in the next one. So until then, this has been its, what's this called? This Magic Moment. We just did the Harry Potter and the Order of Phoenix. I don't know which one is part 6, but that's going to be the next episode, and you'll listen to it then. And again, you'll share it with your children, and with your children's children, and your children's children's children, and so forth, for all of time. Necessary, mandatory listening for anybody going through the Harry Potter film series of any age, really. Anyway, I'm John Forward, and this is the show. Thanks for listening.
Save the last dance for me.